He'd gone to the father type, the authority type, not the younger female. She watched the conversation, Ursa's sympathy. He lay a velvet pad on the counter for the watches, a second for the pearl necklace. Not nervous, Eve thought, her focus on Reinhold rather than Ursa, as the man got out his jeweler's loop, some sort of measuring tool, and began to examine the pieces. Impatient, she thought again. Excited. Ursa spoke again, and Reinhold shook his head, looked down, looked away, pressed his lips together. Into the role he'd created for himself. Ursa laid a hand over Reinhold's, and the sincere sympathy showed, even on screen. Ursa slid the velvet to the side, gestured his daughter over, whispered in her ear. He's telling me to put them away so he doesn't have to see them, Naomi said. And he offered the man a little more than he should have, but we both felt so sorry for him. And on a practical level, the antique woman's watch would have made up for it. Ursa stepped out. I put them in boxes. He set them on the table behind the counter, opened all three boxes. They're very nice pieces. The man's watch, of course, isn't vintage, but a very good watch and well cared for. The woman's is quite an exceptional piece and in excellent condition. The pearls are lovely and well kept. I have the paperwork for you as well. Thank you, Mr. Ursa. My partner's going to give you everything you need for your insurance on this, and in addition, a receipt for all three pieces. You can contact me anytime. She drew out a card. And please, if Mr. Reinhold comes back, don't confront him. Find a reason to step into the back and contact me. You think he'll come back? Naomi pressed a hand to her throat. No, I don't. But I want you to understand, should you see him or hear from him again, he's a dangerous man, and you need to contact the police. Peabody, make sure Ms. Ursa has everything she needs from us.
Ms. Ursa, why don't we just step over here?
When she had a little room, Eve spoke quietly. You were kind to him. Don't let that or him make you feel stupid. The faintest smile moved Ursa's mouth.
It shows.
I bet you have a website, and it plays on being in business for a couple generations, how it's family-run, gives personal, individual service, and how you specialize in estate jewelry.
You'd win the bet. We're three generations. It's my mother's and father's day off. My son and his wife.
He gestured to the other end of the store, where a man and a woman waited on customers. It's one of the reasons he picked you, Eve told him. You're solid. You're respected. You're fair. He'd have researched you, just like he researched the general value of the watches and the necklace. And because, as a family business, you'd tend to be sympathetic towards someone who told you the story he told you.
His father's name is engraved on the watch. I asked for his identification.
You had no reason to doubt his story, and I'm laying odds you aren't the only one he's told it to today. Outside, Eve headed for the second level spot.
Secure those until we get back.
Bet your ass. He walked out of there with 45,000. I don't know what he'll pull in for the other stuff, because it looks like the antique watch was the big ticket item, but he's feathering his nest and fast.
So we'll find his nest. Eve pulled open her car door, stood for a moment scanning the street below. Riding high, she thought, on a big pile of money stained with his parents' blood. Chapter 5. Fitz Ravinsky plated a slice of apple pie a la mode with a paper-thin square of bright yellow cheese. The mode part
consisted of a rounded scoop of non-dairy product the color of an atomic kiwi.
Minty fresh tofu yogurt, he said with a shake of his head. Who the hell puts that on a nice piece of pie?
Not me, Eve assured him.
Takes all.
He slid the pie and a mini cup of black as the soul of midnight coffee into a delivery slot, danced his fingers over the keypad, and sent it on its way.
We're past the lunch rush, but we've had people come in for the pie and the tarts all afternoon.
So I see. Eve glanced out, beyond the counter to the dining area. It probably sat 90 in New York sardine mode during the rush. Right now, it held a solid 20, including the man busy on his handheld and ear unit taking his first bite of pie with mint-fresh tofu yogurt. Even the thought made her stomach turn a little.
If you could give us 5 minutes.
Yeah. Sal, take over here.
Fitz wiped his hands on the front of a white bib apron that had seen a number of wipes already that day. He snagged a big black drink bottle and, with a head jerk, gestured Eve and Peabody after him to an empty table.
You ought to try some pie on the house. Cops don't pay on my shift. Got 2 cousins on the job.
Here in New York?
Up the Bronx, both of them. Pie's good. My ma and my sisters make 'em.
So you're a family business.
18 years this location.
He stubbed a wide finger on the table.
We do okay.
I appreciate the offer, but we're not going to take up much of your time. Eve all but heard Peabody's happy pie stomach whine. We'd like to ask you about Gerald Reinhold.
Fired him a couple months back. Got in late, left early, missed deliveries. Deliveries are a good third of our business. He wasn't dependable, and basically couldn't give a half shit about doing the job.
Ravinsky leaned forward, stabbed the counter with his finger again.
He tries to file on me. I got records to back it up.
How'd he take getting the boot? Eve asked.
Told me to fuck myself. And shoved a banana cream pie off the counter on his way out. Moved out fast,
Ravinsky added with a sharp smile.
Pansy-ass coward put the speed on when the pie hit the floor, in case I came at him.
Did you? Eve wondered.
Nah, just a pie. Damn good pie, but worth it to see him move his lazy ass. He'd put that much energy into the job, he'd still be working here. First time I ever saw him light up, if you know what I mean.
I do. Did you have any specific complaints about him? From co-workers, customers?
You want a list?
On that sour note, Ravinsky tipped back the drink bottle, Adam's apple bobbing as he drank.
My sister Fran caught him tapping a joint out the back. Should have fired him for that, but I gave him another chance, figuring he's young and stupid.
Were illegals a problem with him?
I don't figure. I kept an eye on him after that and never caught him at anything. Problem was lazy and shiftless. I got complaints from customers their food was damaged or cold when they got it, and the delivery server, which would be Jerry, was rude.
Have you seen him since you let him go?
Can't say I have. Saw his girlfriend last week. Ex, now, which proves she's no dummy.
Lori Nuccio?
Yeah. Lori used to work for me about 3 years back. Good waitress. Personable. Fast on her feet. Worked here a couple of years before she copped a job in a fancy place for better pay, better tips, and good for her. Anyhow, I hired the fuckhead because she asked me to give him a try. After I fired him, she came in to tell me she was sorry, like it was her fault. Lori's a good girl. Looks happier, you ask me, since she kicked him out.
Did he hang with anyone in particular who works for you?
I'd say the opposite. He just didn't get along here. Didn't make friends. Didn't especially make enemies. He just put in time when it suited him.
No more than that.
Okay. We appreciate the time.
Got me off my feet. Now, are you gonna give me a hint why you're in here asking about Jerry?
If the media hadn't already lobbed the ball on the Vic's names and some of the circumstances, it soon would. We want to talk to him about his parents' murder.
The what?
Shock vibrant, Ravinsky lowered the big black bottle.
His parents were murdered? Both of them? Sweet Jesus, when? How did you...
He pulled himself in, let out a hard breath.
He killed them. You're saying Jerry killed his own man, Pop?
We need to find him. We need to talk to him. I get the sense you don't have any idea where he might be, where he might go.
He didn't work here a full 3 months, and I can't count the times he called in sick or with some bullshit excuse.
Ravinsky scrubbed a hand over his hair, buzzed so straight and sharp, Eve was surprised his palm didn't go bloody from contact.
He had a couple of friends who came in a few times.
Ah, damn it.
Mal. One of them's Mal. Seemed like a nice kid. The other was kind of a dick. I can't remember his name.
We've already got that information. If you think of anything else, get in touch.
My ma said he'd hurt somebody.
Excuse me.
My ma. She likes to think she's got some sensitive thing going.
He vibrated his hands in the air.
Her great-grandparents were Sicilian. Anyway, she said to me, "You mark my words, Fitz. That boy's gonna hurt somebody. He's got the dark in him."
He shook his head.
I don't know if she figured dark enough for this, but I can tell you, once she finds out, there'll be no living with her.
Out on the street, Peabody gave Eve a pouty stare.
Some of us like pie.
Save it for Thanksgiving. We'll make the rounds, Eve decided. Talk to former employers, co-workers. Maybe we'll hit something.
He's got to run. It's the only thing that makes sense.
If he were going for sense, he'd have been running since Friday. We cover the ground. Then you go ahead and swing by the ex-girlfriend's on the way home. I'm gonna set up in my home office. Look for another angle.
What about Mira?
I'll arrange a consult for the morning. He's gone under somewhere, and he's feeling real flush, real fucking potent right now. So his hole's probably flush, too. He'll have himself a nice dinner tonight. He might even have pie.
Bastard!
Peabody gave one longing glance behind her, toward Pie, as they hiked back to the car. Long day, Peabody thought, and not as much to show for it as she'd figured when it started. Dallas had taught her never to think slam dunk on a case, not even when, as with this one, you knew who, you knew why, you knew how, you knew when, almost from the jump.
He's having a run of luck, she complained.
EDD star Ian McNabb gave her ass a light pat as they turned toward Lori Nuccio's building.
Luck doesn't last, except ours, she buddy.
He made her grin. It was one of his high points on her scale. That, and his own sweet and bony ass, his smart green eyes, his busy brain, and his exceptional energy and creativity between the sheets.
We have to take the stairs up, she said.
We do?
I can't stop thinking about pie a la mode. Even thinking about it's loading up my ass. And add the fact we're going to stop at the market on the way home so I can buy what I need to make one, then you're gonna make us a pie? My granny's cherry berry, if I can find what we need, and you split the cost. Hey, if you bake that sucker, I'll pay for the stuff.
He put on a little strut.
My best girl's baking me a pie.
With a smile on his narrow face, his long tail of blonde hair bouncing, the garden of earrings on his left ear gleaming, he climbed the stairs beside her. He reached over, dancing his fingers against hers.
I like it when we get off shift together.
Me too. I'd like it better if we'd caught this jerk off before end of shift.
You'll get him. You can walk me through it when we get home, and we'll put our heads together. And maybe some other body parts.
She snorted out a laugh as they stopped on Lori's floor.
She's over here.
Peabody walked to the door, knocked sharply.
You said she had the day off. Spent it with a girl pal? They're probably making a day-to-night deal. Dinner, hit a club or two.
Yeah, I just wish...
Peabody turned as the door across the hall opened.
Miss Crabtree?
That's right. Dutifully, Peabody held up her badge.
You spoke with my partner earlier today, Lieutenant Dallas. I'm Detective Peabody with Detective McNabb.
Lori's not home yet. I'm starting to worry.
Is it unusual for her to be away this long?
No, but it's pretty damn unusual for her ex-boyfriend to murder his parents. I heard the media report when I got home about an hour ago. I wasn't out long, just ran a few errands, and I left a note on Lori's door in case she came home while I was out. It's still there. I'm keeping an eye out now.
We appreciate that, and we'd appreciate it if Ms. Nuccio would contact us whenever she gets back.
Hell of a day for her to get a new Lincoln number. But if I can't get a hold of her, neither can that son of a bitch. I guess I'd just feel better if I knew she was tucked in for the night.
I'll keep an eye out for her, Crabtree repeated. Peabody rolled her shoulders as they started back down.
Now she's got me worried. We don't know who she's out with, so we can't tag her friend and play relay.
We could probably find that out. Get names from her work, spread from there. Girls are pack animals, so we ID the pack members, play process of elimination. It takes some time, but it's doable.
Pack animals.
Hey, don't blame me. You're the ones who can't even pee solo.
I'd smack you if that wasn't true, and if it wasn't a good idea. It's probably overkill, but what the hell?
So we'll start putting a list together and buy pie stuff. You do the pie, I'll run down the list.
She took his hand as they exited the building.
Then we'll put our heads and other body parts together. Solid plan.
They missed Lori by 20 minutes. She dragged herself home as the street lamps flickered on. She'd planned to shimmy herself into the new dress she'd bought, along with Casey, then hit the clubs. And just as they'd finished up a well-earned post-shopping hair, nails, eggplant pasta, splitting it to whittle down the calories and the cost, their friend Drew had tagged Casey. She didn't believe it. Didn't want to believe it. But Drew had been so adamant, and then she and Casey had both brought up the report on their new links. Jerry, the man she'd lived with, slept with, had loved at least for a little while, was wanted for questioning by the police, was a suspect in the murder of his parents. God, Jerry's parents were dead. She'd liked them so much, and now they were just dead. She'd never known anyone who'd been murdered, much less spent time with anyone who had been the way she had with Jerry's mom and dad. She really believed, down to her heart, it was all a terrible mistake. Yes, Jerry could fly off, and that time he'd hit her had shown her a side of him she couldn't love or live with. But a couple of slaps, as wrong as they'd been, weren't murder. She'd thought about tagging him, But Casey put the kibosh on that majorly. And had even insisted, when she just wanted to go home, they spring for a cab. No walking, no subway. It had taken some serious shoving to convince Casey she didn't need or want her to stay at her place. She just wanted to go home, be alone, try to figure it out. And she needed to cry some. Maybe a lot. For Mr. and Mrs. Reinhold. And for Jerry, too. For what she'd once imagined might be. She shifted the shopping bags full of things she no longer wanted, keyed herself in. Because she wanted to get inside quickly, and she'd walked her ass off that day already, she took the elevator up. It clunked on her floor, creaked its way open. And Miss Crabtree pushed out of her own apartment before Lori reached her own. "There you are. I was worried. I did a lot of shopping." Miss Crabtree narrowed her eyes. "You've heard about that Jerry?"
"Just a little while ago."
"I think there must be a mistake because—"
"Honey, the police were here. Twice, looking for you."
"Me? Why? Why?"
"Just to talk to you about him. Why don't you come on in here and I'll fix you some tea? No, hell with that. I'll pour you a big glass of wine. I've got a nice bottle I've been saving since my birthday."
"Thanks, but I just want to go home and... I just want to go home and... be quiet, I guess."
"All right. All right now."
Crabtree stroked a hand on Lori's glossy chestnut hair.
"You look so pretty."
"We went to the salon."
"I like your hair. The new color. New's good. Here, this is the cop who came first. She wants you to contact her as soon as you can. I think you might feel better once you do."
She'd never actually talked to any police. Not officially. And it made her feel a little sick. "But I don't know anything."
"You never know what you know."
Miss Crabtree tried a bolstering smile.
"And this one struck me as smart, so you go ahead in and tag her up. If you change your mind about that wine and company, you just knock on the door. It doesn't matter how late, okay?"
"Okay." Lori looked at the card, read Lieutenant Eve Dallas. "Oh, she's the Icove cop. She's Rourke's cop."
"That's what it is."
Crabtree wrapped her knuckles to her temple. "I knew I recognized something, but I couldn't bring it up. See, you never know what you know." "I guess you're right. Thanks, Miss Crabtree."
"I'm right over here,"
Crabtree reminded her. And stepping back into her own apartment, relaxed again. Tucked in, safe and sound. Lori locked her door. Added the deadbolt, the security chain. She started to just dump the bags. The contents no longer interested her. In fact, made her feel guilty and ashamed. She'd been out shopping for things she didn't really need, indulging in manicures and facials, laughing, drinking wine at lunch. And all the while, Mr. and Mrs. Reinhold were dead. She wanted to talk to her mother, she realized. She wanted to talk to her mom and dad, and that's what she'd do. But first, she'd do what they'd raised her to do. What came next? She'd put her things away, then she'd call the police. She moved through her small, colorful space to the alcove of her bedroom. She'd separated it from the living area with its single, bold blue sofa and padded crates she'd painted lipstick red by a curtain formed from stringed beads. Maybe a convertible sofa would have made more sense, but she just refused to sleep in her living space. By next year, she could upgrade to a one-bedroom, hopefully in the same building. That was her next goal, anyway, which had taken a hit when Jerry had taken the rent money and her tip savings and blown it in Vegas. She needed to make it up now and make up the spree she'd just had. But she'd so needed to just get out, cut loose for one day. And it had made her feel better and more like herself. Casey had been right. She'd brooded over her big mistake, aka Jerry, for long enough. Time to jump back in the pool, she thought, as she took the pretty turquoise sweater she'd scooped up on sale out of a shopping bag. She should take Casey's advice on attitude, too, she decided. She should think about how lucky she was. If Jerry had done what they said, and she still couldn't really believe it, she'd had a lucky escape breaking it off with him. All it had cost her really was time, some heartache, a couple of slaps, and money. It could have been worse. She didn't hear him step behind her. The dull crack of the bat against her skull pitched her forward so she hit the bed, bounced, then slid bonelessly to the floor. Standing over her, Jerry smiled, tapped the bat against her leg. "Batter up!" He hadn't hit her very hard. Not as hard as the old man, that's for sure. He didn't want to kill her. Yet. They had some issues to discuss first. But he was well aware of the crap soundproofing on her dump of an apartment, so the discussion had to be a quiet one. "Stupid bitch!" He gave her a good thwack with the bat on her hip. "Did you think you could just say get out? That I wouldn't make copies of the keys? And where the hell have you been all damn day? I've been waiting for you." He poked at the shopping bags, bared his teeth. He'd done some shopping of his own the last couple days. Time to put his purchases to good use. He switched the music on. Not too loud. Don't want the neighbors to complain. Just loud enough. He retrieved his own shopping bag from the bathroom where he'd hidden when he heard the elevator clunk, and listened to her conversation with the nosy old hag across the hall. A shame the nosy old hag hadn't come inside with Lori. He could have made it another twofer. For now, and just for now, he'd settle for Lori. He hauled her unconscious body onto the bed and for the first time noticed the new hair color. Bitch probably changed it to try to land some other sucker. That's all he'd been to her, just some guy to fuck and fuck with. Now she'd be the one getting fucked. Not sexually, he thought. Even the thought of doing her made him sick. But he undressed her. That was to humiliate and intimidate. He'd given this a great deal of thought. He bound her wrists, her ankles. Tight, really tight, so the cord bit into flesh. She deserved some pain. He slapped tape over her mouth, which was too bad, as he'd have enjoyed hearing her scream. Humming along with the music, he propped her up, plumping the pillows behind her before wrapping two more lengths of cord over her torso, around and under the bed. That he secured with a clip lock so it held nice and snug. "That'll keep you where I want you." Once again, reaching into his bag, he pulled out a capsule of Wake Up, broke it under her nose. He watched her eyes flutter, her head turned side to side. A muffled moan sounded against the tape as she struggled to focus. He straddled her, punched her hard in the belly. "Hi, Lori!" And he saw it. What he hadn't seen with his parents. Not just the shock, not just the pain. Fear. It filled him with something he'd never fully experienced. It filled him with joy. He grinned, riding on that joy as she squirmed, as her eyes darted all over the crappy space in her crappy apartment, as choked sounds pushed against the tape. "Don't worry, I'm not gonna rape you. Not that it's rape, seeing as how you put out for me plenty. But you just don't do it for me. Look at this. You're naked, helpless, and I don't even have wood. So just put that out of your mind." He gave her nipple a hard twist, laughing when she bucked under him.
I bet I could make you wet, though, if I were interested. The fact is, fucking you the last few weeks we were together, it was like some chore to cross off my list. Here's a tip. If you want a guy to get you off, don't bitch at him all damn night first. Don't turn on the fake tears, yeah, like you're doing now. And don't, for fuck's sake, tell him what the hell to do. You're not my mother, bitch. And since you heard what happened to her, you should be grateful. He climbed off, stood studying her, and couldn't think of a single reason she'd ever appeal to him. I've got some things to say. And for once, you're gonna shut the hell up and listen! Got that, bitch? He didn't just feel happy, he realized. He felt strong. He felt important. You thought you could dump me, show me the door because I had a little bad luck? Bitching and whining about yourself when I was the one having some trouble. You think you can humiliate me that way? It's always about you, you selfish bitch. And acting like I'd committed a crime because I gave you a couple taps. You deserve that, and more. Now look at you. This is how they'll find you. Naked, helpless, humiliated. How does it feel? Fat tears rolled down her face, added to his sense of joy. He kicked at her shopping bags. You're not the only one who went shopping today. Look what I got. He took a folding knife out of his pocket. You just push this button and blam! A curved, serrated blade just under the legal limit whipped out. And he grinned when her eyes bulged, when her body twisted, when the screams muffled to whines against the blocking tape. Don't worry. It's not for you. I used a kitchen knife on Ma, and it slid right into her, like into a pillow. Made a hell of a mess, though, before I was done. I'm not getting your pussy blood all over my new clothes. Nice threads, huh? He did a little turn. I messed up two sets of my old stuff, first with the old woman and then with the old man. I used my old baseball bat on him, and man, did blood and brains fly! Laughing, he pushed the mechanism on the knife again. You sent me back to hell. Do you know what it's like to live with those two? Always complaining, always telling me what to do, acting like they were in charge. Who's in charge now? Blood stained the cords on her wrists as she struggled against them. A bonus, he thought, and slipped the knife back in his pocket. So, what did you buy today? Crouching, he dumped the contents of her shopping bags on the floor, and as an afterthought, took the knife out again, dragged the blade through the scattered clothes. Her sobs choked against the tape. Slut shoes, too? Let's have a look. He straightened, shoved them on her feet. Yeah, that works. He climbed back on her. You messed up big time by shoving me out, Lori. I've got money now. Lots and lots of money. I can do whatever the hell I want. I can do whatever the hell I want to you, and you can't stop me. You think slapping you was a big deal? Bullshit. He slapped her now. Front hand, back hand, front, back, hard enough her head snapped side to side and her cheeks bloomed red as a rose. That's no big deal, bitch. I'll show you a big deal. He balled his hand into a fist, plowed it into her face. Her eyes jittered and blood dripped under the tape from her split lip. You know, maybe I can get it up after all. Tell me you want it. Tell me you want me to stick it in you. Oh, you can't tell me? He tapped a finger on the tape. Nod. Nod that you want me to fuck you right now. Nod or I'll mess you up. She managed to bob her head, but his fist slammed into her again. Not fast enough,
he said as her eyes swelled shut.
Not bitch fast!
She bobbed her head, sobbing.
You want it? You want what I got?
He grabbed his crotch, then slapped her again.
You can't have it!
Considering, he took out the knife again. Her good eye wheeled and her body began to buck.
Hold still or I'll cut you!
He sawed off a hank of her hair. I don't like the new do. I'm gonna fix it. He hacked, sawed, sliced until her glossy chestnut hair was a choppy cap of tufts.
Yeah, that's better.
They're gonna find you, naked, half bald, and ugly. You earned it. You tried to make me your dog. You're the dog. Bark! Bark! He held the knife to her throat.
I said fucking bark!
She made sounds, and her eye pleaded with him.
Good dog!
You know who's in charge now. He pinched her nose shut with his fingers, and she exploded under him.
You never put that much energy into sex, you stupid bitch.
Lousy lay. When he released his grip, she sucked air in through her nose, her chest shuddering with it. Sobs shook her, a harsh gulping against the tape.
What's that?
He turned his head, exaggerating the move.
I can't quite hear you. Do you want to say something to me? Do you want to tell me you're a bald, ugly dog and beg for my forgiveness? You want to state your case now, bitch dog? Well, that seems fair.
He reached down for the corner of the tape, pulled back.
Oh,
one more thing, and laid the knife against her throat.
Scream, and I'll slice your throat.
Understand me? She nodded.
Good dog.
He reached for the tape again, leaned down so their faces were close.
Forgot? There's one more thing.
He reached back, pulled the length of cord from his back pocket.
I don't give a shit what you have to say.
He wrapped it around her neck, pulled, pulled, and felt the thrill watching her eyes bulge. Watching the red crack of white, feeling her body rage and ripple under his, hearing the gurgles. The tighter he pulled, the more it built, burning inside him. Her bound feet drummed against the bed as she convulsed. Her bloodied hand shook like an old woman's, and he yanked harder, groaning with pleasure, hips rocking as the sharp, uncontrollable sensation clawed through him, out of him. When her eyes went fixed, the orgasm ripped through him, huge, amazing, like nothing before experienced. He choked out his own cry, gulped and gasped for air until his body stopped vibrating. Then he collapsed beside her, sated, stunned, and for the first time in his life, totally fulfilled.
Jesus! Where have you been all my life?
He gave her thigh a little pat.
Thanks.
Now he had to shower and dig out her hoarded tip money, scout out anything in this dump worth taking. But first, he had to see what she had in the kitchen. Like a fat joint of Zoner, killing gave him the serious munchies. Chapter 6. Thoughts weighed her down as Eve turned through the gates of home. Often, usually in fact, after a long day, that first sight of the gorgeous castle-like house Rourke built smoothed things out. The way it rose, spread, jutted against the evening sky at the end of the long curve of road tended to lift weights, reminded her she had a home. After a lifetime that had begun in nightmares, shifted to the misery of shuffling foster care and state control, and to, at long last, her own place in New York that had been primarily a space to catch some sleep between investigations, she had a real home. But tonight, there was just too much weight. It strained against her that a selfish asshole could elude her, even for a day. She needed to start fresh, go back to the beginning and move through it all step by step, and without the distractions of an offer of a captaincy. She needed to clear her head, look at it all from another angle. She needed Rourke, she admitted. His ear, his eye, his canny brain. She'd run it through for him, run it by him, bounce it off him, she determined, as she braked at the front entrance. Maybe she'd miss something he'd see or think of. He'd help. That wasn't assumption, but fact, and as much home to her as the stone and glass they lived in. She started to climb out, and Peabody's date night arrowed into her mind, and for Christ's sake, she didn't have time for that. Didn't make time, she corrected, and slumped back. He did. Rourke made time, and she couldn't claim he wasn't one of the busiest people on or off planet. She hardly ever made time for the fussy stuff, and now that added one more weight. Even when she wasn't neck deep in an investigation, she just didn't think of it. Now, thinking of it, stacked guilt on her head like boulders. She couldn't manage a date night. Just couldn't. But she should be able to put a nice meal together, with a few fancy touches, and balance out his eye, ear, canny brain. She shoved out of the car, bolted for the front door and through, and saw Somerset, looming in black with the pudgy cat at his feet. "I don't have time for witty repartee," she snapped. "That's unfortunate. Is he home?" "Not as yet. I need to put a meal together, on the roof terrace." Somerset's eyebrows lifted. "There's nothing on the calendar. Just..." She waved that away as the cat padded over to ripple between her feet. "I can handle the setup, but tell me what he should eat. We should eat. And don't make it something I hate out of spite." Even scarecrows could be amused, she noted. "Very well. I'd start with the tomato soup with poached shrimp." "Wait," she yanked out her PPC to note it down. "Go." "Then move to a green salad with seasonal pears and a champagne vinaigrette. For the main, I'd suggest lobster thermidor." "What the hell is that?" "Delicious. You'll enjoy it. I'd serve it with a Sauvignon Blanc or champagne and finish with a vanilla bean souffle, brandy, and coffee." "Okay. Got it." She raced for the stairs. "Is that what you're wearing?" "Shut up!" She charged into the bedroom. Damn it, damn it. She wasn't wearing some fancy dress. It wasn't date. But she strode into the closet, and the cat danced at her heels as if they played a game. She had enough clothes for 100 normal people. She should be able to put one decent outfit together. And she was damned if she'd ask Somerset to consult here. She grabbed black pants. Black went with everything, didn't it? Then dug out a sweater. Really soft. In a color that made her think of fall leaves, and with the sparkly band at the neck and hem. That way she didn't have to deal with more sparkles. Boots were probably wrong, she imagined, but she would not put on skyscraper heels. It surprised her to find a pair of black shoes with the sparkly wedge-type heel. Shouldn't surprise her, she thought as she veered into the quick change. She never knew what the closet fairy would stick in there next. Given the circumstances, she slapped on some lip dye, some lash gunk, some face junk. As good as he was gonna get, she decided, and streaked for the elevator. She leaped out. Paused. She supposed she owed Somerset for the fact the sky roof was open to the deep indigo sky, and the internal heaters were spreading a comfortable warmth against the brisk November evening. Now the rest was up to her. Still carrying the dregs of the day's irritation, Rourke stepped into the foyer. It surprised him to find it empty. No Somerset, no cat, particularly on a day he'd have appreciated a bit of a welcome home. He shrugged out of his top coat, and in a habit he'd picked up from his wife, tossed it over the newel post on his way upstairs. An hour in the gym, he decided, pummeling something, then a quick swim. That should scrape the annoyance away. And if not, a very large drink might do the job. But when he walked into the bedroom, he saw Eve's weapon, her badge, on her dresser. So the lieutenant was home, he thought. Maybe he could pull her away from her double murder. He followed the crime reports. Talk her into a sparring match or that swim. Better yet, a good shag. And that should take care of the dregs good and well. In her home office, no doubt, he decided, pacing around her newest murder board or hunched over her computer. He imagined he was in for pizza and a great deal of coffee over the grisly details of her day. He didn't mind it. Not a bit, he thought, as he set aside his briefcase, loosened his tie. Her work was nearly as fascinating to him as she was, and the part he played in it made him feel satisfied, he concluded. Often involved and excited, but primarily satisfied. No one would have believed, including himself, that the Dublin street rat, the well-accomplished thief, the man of wealth and power with such dubious and shady beginnings, could or would work on the side of the law. Even if his line, marking the sides, tended to curve and sway a bit. But she'd changed him. No, more, he corrected. She'd found him and had made all the difference. So he'd have pizza in her office, listen, think, and lend a hand to his cop as she stood for her newest dead. And the frustrations of his own day? Well, they paled, didn't they, against all the blood. To save time, steps, and to be sure, he stepped to the in-house board. Where is Eve?
Eve is currently on the roof terrace, east sector.
Odd, he thought. It wasn't the last place he'd expect, but it ranked high. Curious, he crossed to the elevator. Roof terrace, east, he ordered. He doubted she'd gone up there to take in the view or the fresh air. His wife did little without specific purpose, especially when a case was hot. Just how did all this play into her case, he wondered. Something to do with height, perhaps? Or the view did play in, and she needed that perspective and the scope to find something, or... He stepped out into the flowers, candlelight, the soft warmth and sparkle of crystal, and his mind went momentarily and uncharacteristically blank. Hey! She shot him a distracted look. I've just about got it. Do you? Bemused, and rapidly flipping through his mental calendar, he walked to her. And what's all this? It's dinner. She'd surprised him like this once before, he recalled, and had been wearing a red dress meant to be peeled off. A little different, this, he thought, if his sense of things was on target. But just as lovely. Are we celebrating? No. Well, maybe, sort of. You closed the case? The double homicide you caught this morning? No, it's... There's stuff. But when I was thinking about the stuff and how I wanted to bounce it all off you, I got this Peabody date night stuck in my brain. We're having a date with Peabody? I get two alluring women. Lucky me. She spared him one quick glance through narrowed eyes. You got me, and that's it, pal.
Thank God for it.
He cupped her face, leaned in for a soft, sweet kiss.
We're having a date?
Not exactly. I can't do the big D date thing where you shove all the stuff outside, but I thought I could pay you back a little for all the stuff. Nicer than pizza in my office.
He looked at her for such a long, still moment. She feared she'd screwed something up. Then he pulled her in, wrapped around her, held tight. Tight. Thank you.
It's not that big a thing.
It is to me. And especially tonight.
What's tonight? Shit, did she forget something? She pulled back, focused fully on his face.
No, something else.
Did you have a thing mess up in the universe of Rourke? He smiled at her, tapped the dent in her chin.
You could say.
What?
Not important, especially since I see we have champagne.
No! She shifted before he could walk past her. You take my stuff, I'll take yours.
He trailed a hand down her arm, over the soft sleeve of her sweater.
Marriage rules?
That's right.
What's the thing?
I had to fire 3 people this afternoon. I hate firing people.
Why did you?
Basically, for not doing what they're paid to do. I'll give some leeway there for a space. They could be having a rough patch, some personal problems, health problems. So some room, some time, a discussion can settle that down. But when the not doing what they're paid to do comes with carelessness, and worse, arrogance, there's no leeway.
So you fired them for being assholes?
He laughed and felt some of those dregs slide away.
You could say just that. I know something about it, she said, as he walked to the table she'd set, hopefully well enough, to uncork the champagne. The guy responsible for the double homicide's an asshole who can't keep a job. Arrogance, carelessness, and I think a warped sense of entitlement.
It seems our stuff coincides.
After the elegant and muffled pop of cork from bottle, he poured champagne into 2 tall flutes.
Part of why you hate firing people is because it makes you feel like you made a mistake hiring them.
And you know me well, he agreed.
He handed her a flute, tapped his to hers.
Did you?
Obviously, yes. But at the time, they suited the position well, on all the levels. Over time, however, some can become complacent, lazy, and, yes, entitled. It never paid, he strongly believed, to take a single thing, the good, the bad, the mediocre, for granted.
And now these 3 people are out of work, he added. They won't have an easy time gaining equal employment, as their references won't be stellar.
And the other part you hate is now their lives are screwed up and may stay that way at least for a while.
It's a tough break, but you wear what you sew if you know how to sew anyway.
It took him a moment, then he just laughed again, and there went the rest of the dregs.
That's reap what you sow, as in harvest what you plant.
If you go around sewing something, you're going to have to wear it.
So? She lifted her shoulders.
So, he repeated. You're right. They sowed or sowed, wore or reaped. And now they're out in a damn fallow field wearing something that fits ill. And apparently that settles my stuff, so thanks for that.
No problem.
Hungry?
I am now.
What's for dinner, darling Eve?
We got this soup thing to start it off. Somerset picked the food, so you're safe there.
I was fully prepared for pizza in your office.
He skimmed a hand down her hair, then lightly over her cheek.
We're not ones who need or want to push our stuff outside, or not very often. We do well with it. We do well with it together.
Good to hear, because I've got a big pile of stuff.
Let's have some soup and you can tell me about it.
I'm doing the deal here. She gestured to a chair. What man doesn't like coming home to a hot meal prepared by his adoring wife?
Lap it up, she muttered, and pulled the silver warming covers.
If it's all the same, I'll use a spoon. The reports I heard tell me you're looking for a man, middle 20s, who murdered his parents.
It's more than that. He stabbed his mother over 50 times with a kitchen knife, beat his father to pieces hours later with a baseball bat.
That's considerable rage.
He studied her face carefully.
Were they abusive?
No, there's no indication there was anything like that. He's a fuck-up. Flunked out of college, can't or won't hold a job longer than a few months, including the one his father arranged for him at the father's office. Decent work. I spoke with the supervisor there, some of the co-workers. The father's been with the company for a couple decades. Hard-working, good guy, responsible. The son's none of the above. Same deal with the other bosses I talked to.
So a pattern of irresponsibility and failure.
Yeah, on a personal level, too. Girlfriend, and from what I've been able to gather so far, the only woman he ever lived with or had a relationship with for more than a couple of weeks, booted him. He took the rent money and her tip money savings, she's a waitress, and blew it and more in Vegas. He had to move back in with the parents, and again, according to what I've learned, hasn't made any move toward finding a job. They'd decided to give him until December to get one or get out. He ate soup, warm, comforting, with just a little bite, and considered.
He killed them because they wouldn't allow him to continue to feed off the parental tit.
That's summing it up. He stabbed the mother around lunchtime, Eve began, and took him through the timeline, the financial transfers, the theft, and the selling.
Cold bastard. And now he has cash. More than he's ever had at one time. It's unlikely he'll be careful with it. Besides being cold and vicious, he's young and stupid. I can put out an alert to all my hotels in the city. It's already done, and thanks. And FYI, Eve added, you sure didn't make a mistake hiring Jolene Mortimer or anyone else I dealt with at the manor. She especially is a laser.
I agree. In this case, the previous owners and her former manager were the arrogant ones. Their loss, my gain. I can run searches for accounts your man may open, and will, but it's more likely he'll keep the cash. It's tangible. He can touch it, gloat over it. I don't think you'll track him through deposits and transfers on this one. Not with, what is it, about 175,000? He'll hoard, then he'll squander. It's not going to last him long.
Eve rose to clear and set the next course. The sale of the watches and pearls at Ursa's was a bonus. I doubt he'd expected that kind of a haul. And he'll net a few more, hawking the other stuff, but he's living high. And by the way, since I know you'll be compelled to buy me shiny things for Christmas, you might try there. Ursa's, on the Lower East Side. They're nice people.
So noted. Did you see something you liked?
The owner. I wasn't focused on shiny things.
Nobody likes him, she went on. My man Jerry, I mean. He's got three friends, and two of them are reasonably steady types, and both of those aren't as tight with him as they once were. The third's another asshole, so they suit each other. She decided Somerset had called it well with the salad. If you had to eat leafy green things, this was the way to get them down. So he'd be most likely to reach out to the other asshole? If any of them, yeah, maybe. And she'd need to give another good push there. I think between me and Peabody, we scared them enough so they'll contact us. Wouldn't he want to show off? Especially to friends? Maybe head back to Vegas? Try to offset his losses and the humiliation of them? Did you run a probability? Yeah, 72%. That's high enough to up the alerts on Transpo to Vegas and to add them in to casinos in New York, Jersey. The thing is, he'd never gambled before that trip, so it's not in his usual pattern. Having more than $175,000 at his disposal isn't pattern, Rourke pointed out. Yeah, so the alerts are out. I want to say I know him, and he's gotten this far by sheer luck, but I'm not sure about that. He's got some calculation mixed in there. Getting his hands on the money. That took some thought, some work, even some skill. Just like picking Ursa's for the watches. It was smart. What about the girlfriend? Like showing off for his friends, he might want to show off to her, prove to her, or really himself, what she threw away. Yeah, and I'm going to nail her down tomorrow. She must still be out. Eve glanced at her wrist unit. Unaware, Lori Nuccio lay dead while Jerry shoveled in a smorgasbord of food from her kitchen. You're worried you missed something, Rourke commented. I wonder if I did. There's nothing in this guy's history that so much as whispers about this kind of capacity for violence. He's got a couple of minor knuckle wraps, and he may have, not confirmed yet, given the ex a slap or two. He didn't retaliate against the employers who gave him the axe, or the girlfriend who gave him the boot. He mouthed off a little, then walked. The sleeping beast? Maybe. I'm going to talk to Mira about it. I think the mother was impulse. He snapped. The knife's right there, and she's complaining or advising or warning, whatever. He picks up the knife, jabs her with it, and... She trailed off, picked up her champagne. If you're comparing this to what you did at 8, I'm going to be very annoyed with you. He saw inside her, Eve knew. He saw fast and deep. I'm not. But I understand the moment and what it can do. I was being raped, my arm broken, and I was in fear of my life. So when my fingers closed around that knife, I used it to stop the pain, to survive. He used it to strike out at someone who posed no physical threat, who provided him with a home, a family. But I know the moment, and it can go a couple of ways. Most people with a healthy control switch can and do lose it in that moment. The reaction would be, "Holy shit, what did I do?" She took a slow sip, knowing it, seeing it. He and those like him react with a jubilant, "Holy shit, look what I can do!" And the thrill, the revelation of that, however twisted, pushes them on. We both know those, yes. We've looked in their eyes. Too many of them, Eve agreed. Still, even most of those won't do what he did. But in that moment, you can just lose your mind. You don't stop, can't stop, whether it's the thrill or it's the fear driving you. This was what she'd needed, she'd realized as she rose to clear again and to serve the main. All that blood, it's powerful and it's horrible. With me, the shock, the pain, the blood, the reality of what I'd done sent me into a fugue state, right? That's what it was, just wandering around. Outside, alone for the first time in my life, my arm busted, and the pain from that, and the last rape so overwhelming, I blocked it out. The pain, what happened, everything. And I kept blocking it,
all that I could most of my life. It was him or me, and I was 8 and terrorized. I did what I had to do, but I'm still horrified to know I couldn't stop. I was switched off and couldn't stop. Maybe he couldn't. Or when we get him, his lawyer will try that one. But then he didn't run. And nearly everyone would. Just run or try to cover it up. Somebody broke in and killed my mother. He didn't run because he wasn't horrified. He embraced what he'd done and so was able to wait, to plan and gather and work until his father came home. Then he did it again. And still he didn't run. No. In her mind, she brought back the image of him on the bank security disks. Smug. I don't think there's something broken in him, so much as dead. And maybe it was that moment, the moment when he picked up the knife and put it in her, that it died. Will that help you catch him? Everything helps. I'll go back to the scene tomorrow, walk it through again. Tonight I'll do another reconstruct. And if you can do that search for accounts, it would cover it. He hasn't used his link, so he probably ditched it, bought another. He hasn't been stupid enough to use any debit or credit cards in his name or his parents', but the cash won't last forever. We've got his name and face plastered everywhere. You think he'll try to run now? I don't see what else he can do. New York's too hot for him, and he has what he's always wanted. He's got money, and his parents can't bitch at him anymore. What about other family? He's got the full complement of grandparents, and they've been notified. He's got an uncle on his father's side, an aunt